The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
You were caught on a hot mic after your State of the Union address talking to Secretary of State Antony Blinken and Senator Michael Bennett, saying, quote, I told him, BB, and don't repeat this, but you and I are going to have a come to Jesus meeting. What do you mean by that?
What I meant was, it's an expression used in the southern part of my state, meaning a serious meeting. And I've known BB for 50 years, and he knew what I meant by it. He's hurting, in my view, he's hurting Israel more than helping Israel by making the rest of the world, it's contrary to what Israel stands for. And I think it's a big mistake. So I want to see a ceasefire.
To use your leverage on Benjamin Netanyahu to get that done.
Right. We need to be doing more to make sure Israel lets more aid in. For Bibi Netanyahu to stop his indiscriminate bombing campaign, there is no military way to defeat Hamas. There just isn't.
The idea that you're going to eliminate every Hamas fighter, I don't think is a realistic goal.
I push for a ceasefire.
And there is a growing movement for a call for a permanent ceasefire and release of all hostages. What we're talking about is having consequences that if Netanyahu doesn't allow the aid, if Netanyahu goes into Rafah, we need to stop shipping the offensive weapons. Weapons that are being used to kill Palestinian children and women. This needs to stop while Netanyahu is defying the President of the United States.
I'm very concerned about the prospect of a Rafah invasion by the IDF. I think that it would be catastrophic. And we need this indiscriminate bombing campaign to end.
Okay. And if he can't get the Israelis to change course, then he's going to continue to find himself in significant political trouble with his own party.
Now, as we're talking to young people, they're very disturbed about what is happening in Gaza, and they want to see a ceasefire, and they've been very open about that. The question isn't about what Hamas wants. I think there's a question to the president around what his constituents want, that many of the constituents of the party, many of the new voters and young voters, the new electorate, are saying that they want to see a ceasefire.
So my view is, of course, we cannot support an attack of that kind on Rafah. Bottom line is, though, Netanyahu has got to be told no more money for his war machine unless there is humanitarian aid coming in to feed the people.
Right now, we stand here as men who refute their Jewishness and the Holocaust being hijacked by an occupation which has led to conflict for so many innocent people. Whether the victims of October the...
Hollywood has spoken, I guess. Look at how many shills there are in the media all over the place. I mean, once Joe Obama determines that it's just an indiscriminate bombing campaign, once the Gaza Health Ministry says that there have been 30,000 civilians murdered, killed, once they say it, I mean, you hear it right there in that cold open. They all take the message, even if it's propaganda, and they run with it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show. A couple of late nights, basketball. We had a joyous wedding last evening. Our very own Sam Livingston was the MC. I think he spent the first half of his night correcting misstatements he had made earlier in the evening. But I gave him a pep talk about halfway through. I said, hey, you are a substitute host for the Trumpet Daily. You gotta up your game a little bit. And he did. He finished strong. He really did. Some fun for all of us over the weekend as we had many opportunities to celebrate. So if today's show is 5 minutes instead of 55 minutes, you'll understand. I think we've got 55 minutes worth of material. We'll see how that it unfolds. But it was a day where I was thinking, boy, it'd be nice to have a lot of clips. We've got a few important ones. We'll get to those here in just a second. First, from the morning brief, Richard Palmer, he talked about the chaos happening in Haiti, right next door to the United States, how the U.S. Evacuated all non-essential personnel from the embassy just yesterday, and how these gangs, the president has fled the country, the gangs are taking over, elections have been suspended. And then Richard Palmer quoted from an article we had back in 2010 at the Trumpet magazine, where it says, to this day, Iraq hangs as a millstone around the neck of the United States. And then further on, it says, will Haiti become the next problem or curse for the U.S.? Will this nation-building endeavor, which effectively began on January 16, 2010, become another millstone that ends up sinking America? I mean, look at the, you can see why Donald Trump's message of no more foreign wars. We're going to focus on the problems here at home. You can see why so many people find that message appealing, because look at the disasters from one nation building exercise to the next, from one military operation abroad to the next. That's again, quoting from something we said in the Trumpet, or at the Trumpet 14 years ago. Tomorrow's news today. If you don't have a subscription to the Trumpet magazine, make sure you call our operators today and request a free one-year subscription. The 800 number, as you see there, 1-866-930-3024. So the red line now from Joe Bama. The Israelis, they cannot go into Rafah. We're calling for a six-week ceasefire. Israel, the civilian casualties, we're very concerned about that in Gaza, not so much in Ukraine, but Gaza for sure. And the Gaza Health Ministry has spoken. The Hamas propaganda arm has spoken. And we need to interrupt the Academy Awards, or whatever that show was, to speak out in support of Hamas. You're never going to be able to destroy Hamas. So don't even launch this campaign into Rafah. You know, Richard also had a pretty interesting paragraph in his morning brief about the numbers and just how there's this steady increase of numbers every day, casualties, that is, in Gaza. And the point that he made is there's this guy, he does this study, and he says there's no real rhyme or reason to it. It's just this steady increase. Every day they up it another few hundred or whatever. Even if Israel's hardly doing anything that day, the numbers don't match, in other words. That's in the morning brief. Go check that out if you haven't already. I think I might have a quote later, but maybe I could just get over to it. This is from the morning brief. Abraham Weiner, a professor of statistics at the University of Pennsylvania, has taken a hard look at Hamas's casualty figures, providing them, or rather proving them, to be fake. It says, generally, people are pretty bad at faking numbers. Ask someone to fabricate the results of tossing a coin 20 times, and anyone who knows what to look for can instantly spot the forgery. In the coin toss example, the fake data is almost always too uniform. Real life contains more coincidences, such as several heads in a row, than we think. Hamas's data is similarly too uniform, with the death count going up by a steady amount each day, regardless of how active the Israeli army is. The report has much more, and it just says here, remember this the next time you see Joe Biden, Barack Obama, or anyone else citing Hamas's figures to justify harming Israel. That's what we're seeing. They're throwing figures out, 30,000, whatever. And of course, Israel's responsible for letting all the humanitarian aid into the place that it's trying to eradicate Hamas, of all things. What a different stance you see coming from the dear leader, Barack Obama, particularly when you compare it to Ukraine, where it's like, hey, just send more. Give them offensive weapons. Yeah, who cares about casualties? Who cares about civilians dying? We've got to stop Putin, right? We've got to do everything possible to stop Putin. Not so with the extension, the proxy of the mullahs in Iran, the ones trying to build a nuclear bomb. This is from the Jewish Insider. It says there are growing signs that President Joe Biden is beginning to soften his support for Israel and its mission to defeat Hamas in Gaza, even as the White House is publicly telegraphing that the disagreements are with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, not the Israeli public. Well, you can be sure there's a lot of hatred for Bibi coming from Barack Obama. But they're trying to have it both ways and say, hey, we're still supportive of the Israeli people, demanding, though, a six-week ceasefire. It says after the State of the Union address, where Biden sounded more animated over the humanitarian situation in Gaza than over Israel's ability to defeat Hamas, he gave an interview. I think it was the one that you just saw a little bit of there in the cold open. It says this is a part of an emerging White House strategy to break with Israel's war strategy while proclaiming it still stands with Israel. The Biden administration is feeling pressure from its progressive flank in the middle of an election year. See, the progressive flank. All those protesters that took to the streets in Dearborn. We got to win them over. You know, the people cheering on Hamas in the streets. We've got to win them over. The progressive flank. It says here, for a while, Biden's mollifying of the left was mostly symbolic. Administration officials apologized to Arab Americans in Michigan for initially being skeptical of the Hamas-provided death count and tut-tutted Israel to take more consideration of humanitarian concerns. It says, notably, Biden appeared to cite Hamas's statistics in his State of the Union address when he said most of the 30,000 Palestinians killed were not Hamas. How do we know? Well, we're just taking Hamas's word for it. We know. Israel's only just gotten a few of the Hamas fighters. Most are just civilians. And it's just indiscriminate bombing. That they get the message from on high. The dear leader says, that's it. That's enough. It's got to stop. It's indiscriminate. And then, all, as I said, all the shills, they show up on the talk shows, making Israel out to be the bad guy. Israel's the aggressor here. How quickly they forget all about October 7. We've moved on. Look, it was just one day. It was only 1,200 Jews that got killed. Now we're talking 30,000. And we know most of them, they're not Hamas. Most of them are little children. You may have seen the images of the humanitarian aid that was being airlifted into Gaza. And one of the parachutes ripped apart and it fell onto, I think it killed five people trying to send in food. And that was actually on video, quite unlike all these other preposterous claims. Remember the hospital bombing? None of that was on video. We did the Hamas, the Gaza Health Ministry spokesman, he said it happened. He said there were hundreds of civilians that died. Israel's just bombing hospitals. The Jewish Insider says, but by focusing his energy on condemning Netanyahu instead of focusing on Hamas's intransigence and disinterest in protecting civilian lives, Biden is ignoring the realities on the ground. He is no longer focusing his comments on calls for the terror group to be removed from power, even as Hamas has rejected the outlines of a temporary ceasefire. I mean, Hamas doesn't even want the ceasefire. They want to kill Jews, and they want to continue to kill Jews. And you heard in the cold open, all these people quite happy to carry on with Barack Obama's talking points. This was in the news stack from one of our news gatherers, the verse Genesis 49 and verse 9, where it talks about Judah, the people of Judah, being lion-like. I mean, they were out front in the tribes of Israel when they were going off to war. These are a courageous people. When you rouse them to act, as that verse brings out, I think I have it on my screen here. Judah is a lion's whelp. It says, from the prey, my son, you are gone up. He stooped down, he couched as a lion, and as an old lion, who shall rouse him up? I mean, the people of Judah have been roused because of their 9/11. We haven't mentioned that documentary in quite some time. Israel's 9/11, We produced that. We've tried to promote that because you see how the story is already being revised. It's already changing. October 7 is long forgotten. Think about 9/11, just a few months after, and you know, everyone in America is saying, you know, that's all that we don't need. And I know it was several years later, and a lot of news, you know, a lot of the regime media didn't want to show the buildings coming down. There's people to this day that still do that, but at least, you know, for a few years, at least for a few years, here in America, you have people roused to action. So much of it was misguided, as we said in the trumpet at that time, not going for the head of the snake and so on. But here is little Judah roused to act, and increasingly they're having to go it alone. They're having to go without the support of the United States of America. What a shame. This is from the New York Post. It says Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu made clear Sunday that he would be willing to ignore President Biden's red line and go forward with an invasion of Rafah as the Jewish state continues its military campaign in Gaza. It says Israel has faced heightened scrutiny as the death toll in the Palestinian enclave continues to rise to at least 30,000, according to Hamas-backed health officials. How easy it is for Hamas to just say, they know, it's so simple. Just say it, just say 30,000, and just up at 200 every day, no matter what happens. And then you're going to get all the talking heads over here saying, it's got to stop. We've got to end the operation. You cannot eradicate Hamas from Gaza. So why go into Rafah? It says here, it's a red line, but I'm never going to leave Israel, Biden said. The defense of Israel is still critical. So again, he's trying to have it both ways. Netanyahu said he didn't care if Biden was in favor of military action in Rafah and pointed to the October 7 massacre that killed 1,200 Israelis and saw more than 200 kidnapped. They started this, and Israel is prepared to finish this. We'll go there. We're not going to leave, Netanyahu said in an interview with Politico's parent company. You know I have a red line. You know what the red line is, that October 7 doesn't happen again. So it's looking more and more like a clash between these two brothers. You can see why in the end. That Israel or little Judah turns to Assyria because they're receiving so little help and support from Manasseh, from the U.S. superpower. I mentioned the shills in the media. You'll see in this montage, you know, the hot take coming from this this so-called journalist saying that the strategy from here on out to November should be call Trump, you know, racist, rapist, and fascist over and over again, as if they haven't been doing that for the past several years. But then, you know, you got George Stephanopoulos. He used to work for Clinton. He ran Clinton's campaign back in the 90s. What's the gal at MSNBC? He used to be the spokesperson for Joe Biden, Psaki. Now she's seen as an official journalist. She's just objectively trying to get to the truth. No, they're shills, all of them. So here's Stephanopoulos as he brings, I think her name's Nancy Mace, a Republican rep, and presses her on, why would you support Donald Trump? He's a rapist. Seriously. And at least it's somewhat refreshing to see Nancy Mace push back a little bit. But listen to clip 5.
If he's going to be shameless, which is his greatest asset, the shamelessness of him, is then Biden has to get in there very hard and go rapist, racist, fascist over and over and over again. And then the trials are happening at the same time. He's just had to pay. He's just $93 million poorer right now, and just hammer it in with those three things. Rapist, racist, fascist.
And you've endorsed Donald Trump for president. Mm-hmm. Judges and two separate juries have found him liable for rape and for defaming the victim of that rape. How do you square your endorsement of Donald Trump with the testimony we just saw?
Well, I will tell you, I was raped at the age of 16.
And any rape victim will tell you, I've lived for 30 years with an incredible amount of shame over being raped. I didn't come forward because of that judgment and shame that I felt. And it's a shame that you will never feel, George. And I'm not going to sit here on your show and be asked a question meant to shame me about another potential rape victim. I'm not going to do that.
It's actually not about shaming you. It's a question about Donald
Trump.
No,
you are shaming me.
You've endorsed Donald Trump for president.
Right.
Donald Trump has been found liable for rape by a jury. Donald Trump has been found liable for defaming the victim of that rape by a jury. It's been affirmed by a judge.
It was not a criminal court case, number one. Number two, I live with shame. And you're asking me a question about my political choices, trying to shame me as a rape victim, and I find it disgusting. And quite frankly, E. Jean Carroll's comments when she did get the judgment, joking about what she was going to buy, it makes it harder for women to come forward when they make a mockery out of rape, when they joke about it.
Doesn't it make it harder for women to come forward when they
It makes it harder when other women joke about it, and she's joked about it. I find it offensive. And I also find it offensive that you're trying to shame me with this question.
It's worse than shaming her. They're taking this shameful narrative and just running with it. Here's E. Jean Carroll. She's to be believed. Oh, yes. She joked about it, talked about how playful Donald Trump's behavior was. That something that supposedly happened, in the 1990s? She didn't even know the year. And in the media, these people, they egged her on. No, you've got to come forward. Write a book. Talk about how you were raped. They've set this up just like they set up the January 6th narrative. And then there he is, just waving it in her face, saying that how dare you support Donald Trump? He's guilty of rape. It wasn't even in a criminal court. It's just a civil case. He says she's a wacko for bringing all these false charges. And then they get him, a New York jury at that, for defaming her. And Trump's got to put up the $90 million just so he can put it up for appeal. Do you think, if it's overturned on appeal, do you think George Stephanopoulos is going to come back and say, you know what, I had this program with Nancy Mace, and I basically asserted that Donald Trump was guilty of rape, and it now turns out that he wasn't. They're not going to come back and apologize, ever. They're all shills. They're part of the regime. They're swooning before the dear leader. This is from, just to highlight the crazy climate that we're living in politically. Last week, Letitia James, she showed up, I think it was for the fire department or the police department in New York City, and they were booing her, a lot of them, booing her and cheering for Trump. As I said earlier, a week or two ago, there are more people. In some ways, the climate is changing. It is getting better for Donald Trump. But you still got to be pretty careful, especially in a place like New York. It says here the FD New York commissioner, Laura Kavanaugh, is hunting down smoke eaters and other staffers who mercilessly booed New York Attorney General Letitia James and cheered in support of Donald Trump during a department promotion ceremony this week. It says the FDNY chief of department, John Hodges, fired off an email to other agency honchos warning a reckoning led by the department's Bureau of Investigation and Trials was coming over the chorus of boos and chants of Trump. A reckoning, the higher ups at the fire department, they're saying a reckoning is coming because you cheered for Trump. The insanity. It says BITS is investigating this so they will figure out who the members are, Hodges wrote. I recommend they come forward. I've been told by the commissioner it will be better for them if they come forward and we don't have to hunt them down. They're hunting them down for showing any kind of vocal support for Donald Trump. Trump derangement syndrome. Somebody mentioned that on the morning meltdown. And oh boy, Mika and Joe got a little defensive. No, we're not deranged. It's completely normal for us. to obsess over all things Trump. This is from Mark Elias. He's the Democrat operative. Says it is past time to bring Trump to justice. We got to get him. We got to hunt him down. From the attacks on the 2020 election to his recent efforts to discredit his criminal cases, the four-time indicted former president has lied to the American public, trampled on the U.S. Constitution he swore to uphold, and smugly abused the legal process. He has threatened witnesses, intimidated court officials, and attacked prosecutors. Trump derangement right here. Mark Elias, I mean, he passes for a credible journalist because he's attacking Trump all the time. All the time. CNBC had Trump on this morning for an interview talking about the dollar being downgraded by some, you know, international agency. And the woman's like pressing Trump on this development abroad and talking as if it's Trump's fault. I kept waiting for Donald Trump to say, you are aware of the fact that I've been in Mar-a-Lago for 3 years. As it was, Trump said, we can apply pressure on China this way or Russia this way, get the strength of the dollar back and so on. I mean, he's talking like he was president. And technically speaking, he still is. But it never ceases to amaze me how easy it is for them to blame him for everything. Mark Elias says it's long past time that he should be in prison. Says now, having all but gained the nomination, Trump's assault on the rule of law will have the formal imprimatur of the GOP. We should expect his tactics will become bolder and his rhetoric more dangerous. So he's out there causing division because he gives a campaign speech. he's at a campaign rally. Trump has so far succeeded in escaping justice by tying up his first federal incitement for mishandling and failing to return government documents before a sympathetic federal judge he appointed in Florida. So the one in Florida is not going so well. But we got to get him. We got to hunt him down. Megyn Kelly, she sent this tweet out a few days ago. With the Trump immunity case being accepted by SCOTUS, that was last Monday, and what's happening in Georgia, Trump may well have pulled the inside straight he needed to beat these cases. The New York case is a joke. Georgia is dying, severely delayed. Florida isn't happening before November. And now neither is January 6th, the D.C. case. Incredible. Pretty incredible. The lawfare strategy is collapsing. And so that's why you see Mark Elias and others lashing out. That's why you see them so sensitive when you talk about Trump derangement syndrome. They know they're running out of time. And they also know the country in so many ways is going up in flames. All the crime and the fake president last week trying to say that crime's going down. There was a story in The Stack, by the way, saying a lot of commentators talking about the kinds of drugs that the fake president had to have been on Thursday night's State of the Union address. And then Friday, he gave virtually the same speech, not near as much energy, loaded with gaffes, just listened to a few experts. These are a few excerpts of essentially the same speech that he gave at State of the Union. He gave it the next day. I think he was somewhere in Michigan. I'm not for sure. But anyway, play that montage.
I think I should go home now. Oh, Delco. I'm Joe Biden. I'm Jill Biden's husband. And thanks to the elected officials here today, last night in the U.S. Capitol, the same building where our freedoms came under assault on July the 6th, excuse me, January the 6th, I have a message for you. Send me to Congress that I can support this right. We cut the deficit, and we added more to the national debt than any president in his term in all of history, and under Donald Trump. These guys talk about, looks like companies that you wouldn't notice, they thought you wouldn't notice, but, you know, if they give you the same size bag of potato chips with about 20% fewer potato chips in it. No, by the way, that's not a joke. Some of you may have seen there was a TV thing on how Snickers bars, same exact price, with don't hold me the exact number, but like 20% less bar. No, I'm serious. Congress needs to sign Bobby Casey's bill to stop shrinkflation. And I've gone now, I spent over almost 200 hours with the leaders of Europe, the heads of state. I know them all. I've known them well. And guess what? You know what every one of them says to me, virtually except Orban? I'm serious. As we leave these meetings, well, indirectly, they grab my arm and they pull me aside. I'm serious. They pull me aside and say, you've got to, you can't win again.
So there you go, the stump speech for the fake president for the next 8 months. I can't even believe it's going to be loaded with Snickers and shrinkflation. Meanwhile, you've got Donald Trump talking about serious issues. You've got that woman who was slain in Georgia, her family meeting not with the fake president, meeting with Donald Trump. That's pretty amazing. I mean, that illustrates everything that you need to know about the fakery, the pretending that goes on in the United States. Donald Trump is one of the few who sees right through it. Well, there's more commentators, I suppose, that do. But the fake president, he sat down with, I forget which outfit this is, but he said that he regrets this murderer. Think of it. This murderer. He's arrested in New York. Catch and release. He ends up in a sanctuary city. He kills this woman. And this administration is more concerned about not labeling him an illegal than it is about the poor victim and her family. Listen to clip two.
I noticed the look of surprise on your face when you walked into the chamber and you saw Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene. It was priceless. You feigned shock at seeing her. But during your response to her heckling of you, you used the word illegal when talking about the man who allegedly killed Lakin Riley.
An undocumented person. And I shouldn't have used illegal. I should have, it's undocumented.
So you regret using that word?
Yes.
He really regrets using that. That's the word that, you know, Nancy Pelosi, remember, she really had a problem with that. And so did the progressive wing of his party. They're not illegals. They're just not yet documented. Where's the family of the victim? Who is the victim here? He's treating this illegal alien murderer like he's a victim. Like he talked at length about immigration and how this country's built on immigrants coming in from all over the world. That's why the borders are wide open, right? Want to blame Donald Trump for anything that could be criticized about the border, even as they work so hard to open the borders and to just invite crime into the streets of America. Listen to this shocking report coming out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, clip one.
Residents of the city will see a major change in the way police respond. They will no longer respond to calls that aren't considered in-progress emergency. That means calls like criminal mischief, theft, harassment, and most burglary alarms will all be handled by an enhanced telephone reporting unit. That means residents will file a police report over the phone. Officers will not respond unless it's an emergency. Also, between the hours of 3 a.m. and 7 a.m., there will be no officers at any of the six stations throughout the city. Call boxes that link directly to 911 have been installed for people to use in case of an emergency. And during the overnight shift, there will be as few as 20 officers to cover the entire city.
Wow, total breakdown. And we wrote about this, I think it's the 2015 trumpet. You saw how the dear leader was undermining law enforcement, any kind of law enforcement agency all over the country, particularly local law enforcement, because the dear leader, he wants control. I mean, he does use law enforcement. He uses lawfare. They're, of course, very supportive of the police when it comes to the fake insurrection on January 6th. But outside of that,
Well, look at Pittsburgh. They're closing the police down from 3 a.m. to 7. That seems like that would be a high crime period. From 3 to 7 in the morning. And no one available at any of the six precincts or departments. It's unbelievable. And this is what a lot of progressives want. They'd rather put the money toward social programs, you know, and helping the criminals, getting them out of jail quickly, catch and release. Don't call them illegals. Don't really say there's, you know, they're not sending their best. Don't say we're inviting crime in. Look, these people are building the country. That's what Joe Biden said just over the weekend. The Daily Mail, as I said, it's keeping track of some of the more serious and heinous crimes committed by the undocumented. Some gained national attention, others simply made the local news, but were no less significant for those affected. Ira Melman, spokesman of Washington, D.C.-based pressure group, the Federation for American Immigration Reform, told the Daily Mail that Riley's murder, that's the gal in Georgia, was an avoidable tragedy precipitated by the actions of the federal government and sanctuary policies among local governments around the country. We have gangs that have materialized. New York City is a prime example, committing crimes and attacking police officers. There's gangs. And then you catch them and release them, and then they go to some other sanctuary city across the country, down in Georgia, over to California. This is some of the examples. February 27, Athens, Georgia, murder. Riley's case made headlines, etc. Her suspected killer has been identified as Jose Ibarra, a Venezuelan national who entered the country illegally at El Paso, Texas in September 2022. See, right there on Joe Obama's watch. February 27, Langley Park, Maryland, murder. Less than a week after Riley slaying an illegal migrant, Nilson Trejo Granados was arrested and charged with the murder of a two-year-old boy in Maryland. The 25-year-old from El Salvador is the fifth person seized in connection with the death of Jeremy Caceres, who was caught in the crossfire on February 8th after a gun battle broke out between two groups of men in a drug turf war at Langley Park. Another one, February 27, Kenner, Louisiana, rape. Cops in Louisiana arrested illegal migrant Angel Matias after he went on the run while accused of raping a 14-year-old girl, causing 25 days of terror in a local community. It's just I could give more examples. It's just happening all over the place. All of it, as I say, under Joe Obama's watch. Well, when we come back, I have another clip from Tucker. Maybe we can save that for a future show. And finally come around to the feature we have put together on the Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered, the new exhibit, the brand new exhibit. It's only been open for a couple of weeks right here in Edmond, Oklahoma. If you're anywhere near central Oklahoma, you're going to want to make sure that you plan to visit that exhibit. We'll have, as I say, a video feature spotlighting that when we come back. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
What has happened to the United States of America? The wealthiest, most powerful nation in human history is suddenly divided, weakened, radical. The evil in America has grown powerful. The good has grown weak. The honorable parts of American history are succumbing to a direct, targeted, sustained assault. Someone, something is dismantling America's history, purpose, and character.
Fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
Political dysfunction, social strife, economic peril, catastrophic moral failure. fires, attacks, riots, lies. The nation is being attacked from within by its own leaders. Powerful elites in government, journalism, academia, and beyond are intentionally, rapidly destroying what America is in order to make it into something else. There is a reason why your nation is crumbling before your eyes. There is a spirit and a specific perpetrator that is attempting to blot out America. Only America Under Attack reveals that perpetrator and the motive and spirit behind him. This newly expanded book shows you the reason why America has changed so dramatically, so suddenly. If you're confused and concerned about what is happening to America, request your free copy of America Under Attack by Gerald Fleury at thetrumpet.com.
On Sunday, February 25th, more than 600 people gathered in Armstrong Auditorium for the world premiere of the Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered exhibit. In the weeks leading up to the grand opening, the exhibit team worked overtime to complete several special projects featured in the exhibit, including a large 3D map of Israel's territorial boundaries at the time of David and Solomon, replicas of the massive Phoenician-style capital found in the City of David, and a massive detailed model of Solomonic Jerusalem. Staff worked in concert with officials from Israel Museum and the Israel Antiquities Authority to safely transport and install all of the artifacts into their display cases. The exhibit, which will run until January 2025, showcases dozens of exciting artifacts from 10th century BCE Israel, artifacts that prove the existence and power of David and Solomon's kingdom. The exhibit opening ceremony featured guest speakers from the Israel Museum and Israel Antiquities Authority. Exhibit assistant curator Brent Noctegal announced the identification of a 3,000-year-old gold Phoenician electrum earring pendant discovered in the royal quarter on Jerusalem's Ophel. Mr. Gerald Fleury, founder and chairman of Armstrong Institute of Biblical Archaeology, gave a keynote address highlighting the importance of biblical archaeology in the modern era. After the ceremony, visitors perused the exhibit in the lobby. People from around the world were able to virtually visit the exhibit via an immersive, high-quality tour on the Armstrong Institute website. On Sunday evening, nearly 700 patrons and many online viewers enjoyed a special performance of Celtic Throne in honor of the exhibit. Through this special exhibit, the Armstrong Institute works to let the stones speak, proving the monumental nature of the United Monarchy during the reigns of Kings David and Solomon. To learn more about the Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered exhibit, book an exhibit tour, or view the virtual exhibit tour online, visit armstronginstitute.org. To book tickets to a Celtic Throne performance near you, please visit celticthrone.com.
There you go. Great new feature, spotlighting the brand new exhibit. You can see just how beautiful the exhibit is in looking at some of those images. This came in response to the show, what would it be, a week and a half ago, where we sat down with Brent Noctegal, the assistant curator that you saw there in the footage. It says, I saw the show this past Friday in the interview with Mr. Noctegal. The opening of the Trumpet Daily, though, stole the show. To see and hear the children singing the national anthem of Israel was really inspirational. That's how we led off the program that Friday, a week and a half ago. All of the shows, by the way, we post them after the fact at trumpetdaily.com and also at the Rumble channel, rumble.com/trumpetdaily. So you can scroll down and find the interview with Mr. Noctegal if you'd like to see that particular program. And the little ones playing the piano and the violins was really something to see. They were so good. I'm sure God is truly pleased to see the young people taking such great interest in his church. Also, I took the virtual tour to see the wonderful exhibits on display. It says there was a lot of information to read, too. How can anyone doubt the existence of these two great kings in Israel now? And really, we got the private tour from Brent last week, and he was telling us how that you really, there's no way you could have even done this 10, 15 years ago. A lot of these finds, there's a few exceptions. There's some crucial ones that were discovered in the early 1990s, the middle 1990s. But a lot of it's been a lot more recent than that. I mean, God's just bringing all of that history to life. He's putting it right in front of our eyes. He's telling the world, look, look at what I established. Consider the covenant that I made with King David. Consider how glorious and expansive that kingdom was during its peak under the reign of Solomon. It's all there. It's all laid out. The storyboards, the artifacts, the replicas, that 3D, rendering, all the topography, it's on display at the Kingdom of David and Solomon Discovered exhibit. It says, how can anyone doubt the existence of these two great kings in Israel now? It says, for that matter, how can anyone doubt the existence of the great God who had a hand in these kings' lives? It says, what wonderful blessings God is giving to your church and the people. It says, it's the only church I follow because it's the only one speaking the truth. This is where you turn to get the truth. The website, thetrumpet.com, the booklets, my father's program, The Key of David. Truth. Truth. We've got to, as I was telling the students this morning, we just watched this documentary. All these Laodicean representatives who were so proud of the fundamental transformation that they carried out in the Worldwide Church of God. They just dismantled everything that Mr. Armstrong set up and established. They changed all of his teachings, all of his doctrines. None of them on this video. They're patting themselves on the back. They're taking credit for the transformation. They're talking about how that now they're under grace. They don't have to worry about the law anymore. They get grace covers past and the future, anything. So anything goes, right? That's religion that the devil loves. Oh, yes. We used to have sermons where, we were really told that, we need to step it up and follow in the steps of Christ. Yeah, well, what's wrong with that? We used to have sermons that were kind of like a fiery message from a prophet in the Old Testament. Yeah. What's wrong with that? Satan will package his message. He'll dress it up. He'll make it look nice and neat. Oh, it's all said and done. The Washington Post said that he's guilty of rape. So what are you supporting him for? They set it up. They package it just so. And it's just, and then you open it up and you see it's just all based on lies. They're lies. Through and through. That's why it's important to have exhibits such as this. Because people want to erase it. They want to revise it. They want to pretend it didn't happen. Anything and everything to discredit God. That's the goal. That's the objective here. We sat down. I think we still have that clip. It's a couple minutes from my sit down with Mr. Noctegal a couple weeks ago. Play that if you guys have it.
Yeah, so I would say up till 10 years ago, this exhibit would be impossible. Most of the discoveries that are featured in the exhibit have been discovered in the past 10 years. So it's all, we've got several that are appearing for the first time in a museum or a public setting,
right.
But most of them only were unearthed in the past 10 years as well, 10 to 15 years. And so from that standpoint, this is new information that's coming to the public that couldn't have been done before. It's also important to see the exhibit in the context of the debate over King David and Solomon. One of the items that we have is actually a replica, but it's a wonderful replica from the Israel Museum. And this is of the Tel Dan Stela, which is this discovery that kind of settled the debate in the academic world that whether King David was a real historical personality or not. This happened in 1993. It was discovered in Tel Dan in the north of Israel. And it was the first extra-biblical reference to King David, mm-hmm. definitive reference. There's been others where people debate about it, but not this one. Whether you're an ultimate, Bible skeptic or you believe in the accuracy of the Bible, everyone came together to agree in 1993 and 4 that this mentions King David, and the exact wording on that inscription mentions the House of David. So this doesn't just say he was a king, but he was a king that had a dynasty. That's what this word house can mean.
Right.
So David's got a dynasty. And so from that point forward, from 1993 onwards, the argument then becomes, so David existed, but the Bible isn't an aggrandized version of this maybe small town leader, David, that occupied, you know, Jerusalem in the 10th century, or is there archaeological evidence of the kingdom as the Bible would describe?
Anything the scholars can do to try to minimize the size, the significance of David's reign, they'll do it. They'll do it. And that's why we've got to bring some passion and zeal, as I was telling the students this morning. I mean, look at how quickly most of God's people just fell away from the truth, rebelled against God's law, just rejected God's government, and then started talking about Herbert Armstrong like he was some cruel monster, or that it really wasn't a successful work. It really didn't go around the world. It really wasn't well received from kings and prime ministers all over the world, or his message, or people really didn't like reading the plain truth. That had his work, this is all brought out in Raising the Ruins, by the way. But what a worldwide work it was. And yet, look at how quickly it was all dismantled. As I said to the students, I mean, it's not enough to just receive the truth. You've got to defend it. You've got to hold on to it. That's what 1 Thessalonians 5:21 says. Hold fast that which is good. Mr. Armstrong was a man of God. He preached the truth. And we got to hang on to it. Don't let him, it says in Revelation 3, don't let a man, some man, come and take your crown, your reward, your future. Hold on to that crown. Hold on to that reward. Cherish it. Treat it like valuable, precious metal. Hold on to it, God says. This is from one of our teenage viewers. If you want to send some feedback, by the way, you can reach us at td@thetrumpet.com. But one of our teens says here, I was thinking about you after listening to The Trumpet Daily, and I just wanted to send you an email to tell you that I admire your courage and appreciate what you do. Thank you for everything you do for the work. That's pretty nice encouragement coming from one of our younger viewers. Another one here says, a marvelous Wednesday broadcast, miraculous with miracles compounding upon every step forward. Such wholesome inspiration from you all at the Philadelphia Church of God. That's responding to the show from last Wednesday. I don't think that one was the Trump miracle. That was the one we titled Monday's show, but let me see if I can find it here. Donald Trump's Super Tuesday. Again, you can get to that show at either of our websites. Another one here in response to that program on the exhibit. What a beautiful opening. I love listening to the children sing. I have four grandkids the same age as these kids. Thanks again for all the PCG does to bring brightness and hope to this dark world. I pray and give thanks for all the PCG family. One more says here, thank you for filling in. This is with respect to Sam Livingston, who brought his A game on the substitution responsibilities. He brought his A game a couple weeks ago and then was a little groggy at the start of the event last night, but he brought it back. He caught his mojo. Thank you for filling in for Stephen Fleury. Another great show. What you said when you said that you ran out of time and were not able to play another clip, I actually looked at the time thinking it was the end of a segment rather than the end of the fastest moving hour in broadcasting. Speaking of an hour, we went the whole hour. The fastest moving show in broadcasting. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We appreciate you joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.